Hey everybody, you've been listening to PTO Junction on CILU Radio 102.7 FM in Thunder Bay. That's all around the world at luradio.ca. We just heard July Talk featuring Tanya Tagak with Beck and Call. Hani Al-Khatib before that with Dead Wrong. A Tribe Called Red started off that set with a song called R.E.D. And that is the show. Thank you very much for listening. You can find me on the internet in all of the usual places. Check out playlists on luradio.ca. Also send me an email, ptojunction@luradio.ca is my address. All kinds of requests and suggestions and feedback are welcome. Stay tuned. Keep listening to CILU, especially right now because the Thunder Geeks are on. They're going to blow your mind. And the New Pornographers are going to play us out. Good night.
CILU is supported in part by the students of Lakehead University, our sponsors, and our listeners. At this time, we would like to thank the following sponsors for their continuous support.
The Rec and Culture Division of Thunder Bay, bringing free events to the waterfront and all of Thunder Bay. Check out thunderbay.ca/events for more info and follow them on Facebook. Joey's Restaurant, a tasty little place for seafood, located at 595 Arthur Street West. Visit them Tuesdays for all-you-can-eat fish and chips and Thursdays $5 fish tacos. Some conditions apply. The Thunder Bay Blues Fest. Log on to tbayblues.ca to keep up with all the news on Thunder Bay's largest annual music festival, entering its 19th year in 2020.
All of my life. thing. And I had to Google it. One's baked, one's fried.
They're both doing it the same way.
Probably.
It's pizza pizza. They're not putting in the effort to make a difference.
Well, let's talk about something that has a higher star rating. Team 4 Star. We're here with Thunder Geeks, with Team 4 Star. Guys, introduce yourself.
Hi there, I'm Lanny Pator, co-writer, co-creator, co-star of Dragon Ball Z Abridged, founder of the gaming side.
You found gaming?
I found gaming.
Where was it?
It was within you all along, my son.
It was the friends we made along the way.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm Antfish. I'm co-writer, co-director, co-producer, and project manager of Final Fantasy VII Machina Abridged. I also star in it. Do some voiceovers in Dragon Ball Z Abridged. I am currently now playing Mr. Satan.
Curtis Takahata 101 Arnott. I'm one of the co-founders, co-creators of DBZA. Project manager of Hellsing Ultimate Abridged. Co-project founder for FF7 Machina Abridged, which Amphish has taken off my hands. And it's in his firm, muscular hands now instead.
So how did Team 4 Star get started?
Really, it all kind of started because we were all doing our own little individual parody projects. I was doing a Yu Yu Hakusho. You and your buddy were Taka were doing a G Gundam. And Ant, you were doing.
I was doing JoJo's Abridged. I'm sure you can tell.
Is that
big
a JoJo
fan.
Reference?
And Kaiser, the third, I guess, like
founder
of the the third. Trinity founder of TFS.
Trinity.
He was doing a loop on the third bridge, and he was one of the most spectacular editors I think any of us had seen at the time. Still is, because he's grown with the times.
Oh, yeah.
He's, to this point, his meticulousness is almost...
No, have you ever seen him in his workflow? Like, he just...
Yeah.
He's like zenned out.
Oh, no, he's in the ether.
Yeah, anyway, we had all met, you know, through having various interests
Skype.
In each other's projects on Skype. Eventually the conversation came up, I believe, between you and he, like, you know, if you could do any project, what would it be? And Kaiser's answer was Dragon Ball.
I coaxed him into asking everybody to, like, maybe do a Dragon Ball Z Abridged.
Yeah.
With, like, because everyone respected his editing, and I think they'd all trust him. If he was at the helm as an editor, I think they'd all be willing to join onto the project.
And there had been a lot of, like, a few Dragon Ball Z Abridged before that.
But you guys
like,
were working on
series.
You and the previous group were working on...
Yeah, myself and Masako, and our buddy Vegeta, and our friend Rissa, we were working on, like, the movies, just because we're like, yeah, doing all of the show, that's a tremendous undertaking. I don't got that in me. But then when Kaiser brought it up, like, and you guys asked me if I'd want to be part of it, I said, okay, two conditions. I get to play Vegeta, because I hadn't gotten a chance yet.
Because you really wanted to play Vegeta.
Yes, I did. And I get to be on the writing team, and here we are almost 9 years later.
Yeah, and I remember that night, we ended up scripting a lot of jokes, and we're just like, oh, wow,
yeah,
we
came up with the dynamic between Nappa and Vegeta, and the idea for Ghost Nappa that night.
it was just, what was really amazing, I'll always remember that scripting session, it was like three people who had never worked together sat down and just started pitching jokes.
Yeah, just kind of coming together, because none of us had, like, except for you, like, you worked in a team.
But... I worked with another writer, but, like, honestly, and you had worked on the movie slightly in another writing team, but it was almost like a match made in heaven, because after all the years, I can actually attest to the fact that the three of us are so vastly different as writers that when we come together,
it just kind of works out.
It kind of boils all of the cringiness out of each of our individual styles, and we get this, like, really pleasant middle-of-the-road style, and then Kaiser cuts our jokes.
Yep. And then he rewrites the entire thing and just goes from there.
you think we're kidding a little, but there's been moments.
There's truth to every joke.
We love him, though.
So how did you guys, like, get into voice acting?
I come from, like, a radio background, so...
It was kind of in my blood. It's in the family.
Yeah,
it's in the family.
What really got me interested in it was when I was in theater in high school, my school did a production of Little Shop of Horrors. I got cast as the voice for the plant, Audrey 2. You know, I would sit back there, deliver my lines, and realize... Holy crap, this is a lot of fun. I get to act just with my voice. Also, I don't have to show up an hour early to get makeup done. I can show up with, like, a bag of Taco Bell, sit backstage, and just do whatever.
I just go, feed me in between.
Feed me, Seymour.
In between takes, just eat a piece of that gordita crunch.
Literally behind, like, backstage at that show, I was sitting back there with my DS just playing Supersonic Warriors. Yeah, I just have this like little window that I look out so I can see what's going on around my area of the stage. And I was like, okay, here we go. My turn now. And then I just sit back down, eat a dick, Sal.
No, you eat a dick, Maurice.
That's what really got me into it. And from there, I just kind of pushed forward, eventually making Yu Yu Hakusho Bridge, kind of like, you know, taking that passion to the next step. And
after watching Little Karibos.
Yes.
You know, Little Karibos.
Yu-Gi-Oh! Bridge, I think we can all say, is a basic inspiration for everything that we've kind of turned into.
If it weren't for Patient Zero, we wouldn't have been infected.
Nope, he was Patient Zero. From there, I just continued trying and trying, and eventually I started getting paid for it, so...
Yeah.
Why stop now?
Yeah.
And your voiceover story is very different.
Yeah, mine started like when I was, you know, when you're a kid, you're always like doing impersonations of like Looney Tunes or whatever cartoons you're watching, right? So I used to do that a lot. And then back in middle school, my buddy got me like a little gooseneck microphone so we could like play CSGO or whatever.
Gooseneck.
Didn't happen. Instead, what happened was I took it and I found out there was like a sound recorder application on my computer at the time. So I was like, okay, I'm going to try to do some like record some radio plays. And I just started doing it for like 2 summers, and I would just end up making like these little radio plays that were like half an hour long, and they were just like improv, like impressions of different things. And then eventually I found YouTube.
Do they still exist?
Yeah, of course they still exist. I post them on SoundCloud. And then eventually I found my way to YouTube because I found a dub of do you guys remember I'm the Juggernaut?
Yes. Yeah.
So that's what started it for me. I saw that. I was like, people can do this? And so I just downloaded like episodes of SpongeBob and I just started doing the exact same thing, but for YouTube. But then eventually I started doing more stuff with like Dragon Ball and Beast Wars and blah, 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 and all that. And then eventually a friend of mine saw it, and he's a voice actor in Toronto, and he said, hey man, we should meet up and like talk because like I think you can do this professionally. I was like, people do this professionally? Yeah, and so we met up, and I was like, you know what? Yeah, I'm going to try doing this. So I found an online forum, the VAA, which is now closed down, but
oh, is it?
Yeah, it is. It's donezo. There's still the voice acting club for all of you aspirers out there. Yeah, and then eventually he helped me get an agent and a demo ready and all that, and then I got represented, and since then I started doing work with some union work, but mostly like non-union work for like video games and cartoons and corporate stuff. So
that's what the online voice actor gets to enjoy.
Pretty much, yeah.
For me, I just saw Yu-Gi-Oh! Bridge, and you know, I wanted to do my own bridge series. So I just, for the first time ever doing voice acting, I ended up recording all the lines for episode 1 in one sitting. And my voice hurt so much that I had to start gargling shots of whiskey to keep my voice going, because I thought that was the proper technique you had to do.
God. Salt water.
Warm salt and water. Again, I didn't even do a proper warm-up.
What's the warm-up?
My first voice was Michelob Chariot. So I was a scratchy voice like this the whole time. So like, yeah, good stuff. Good stuff for the ears. I kept doing like a lot of like comedy voices for a bridge series and stuff. And then someone from the Voice Acting Alliance actually approached me to do a dub line. It was just like an actual like dramatic dub. I was like, oh, okay. Kind of fell into that. And then I realized I kind of like every aspect of acting. One thing led to another. Now I've been in games, comedies, and just, I don't know, it's just been kind of crazy. I really enjoyed it.
So you said that Little Karibo really inspired the abridged genre, but you were all working on your own shows before making Dragon Ball Z Abridged. Yep. What made you choose each of your shows?
When it came to choosing my show, Yu Yu Hakusho, it kind of came down to, okay, what footage do I have access to? What shows do I enjoy? And the answers were, on DVD, I had all of Berserk and most of Yu Yu Hakusho. And at the time, our buddy Ben Creighton, HBI2K, he was doing a Berserk The Abridged series. So I'm like, well, that's off the table. Also, who the would try to make a comedy out of Berserk? So Yu Yu Hakusho is kind of the obvious answer for me on that regard.
During the time when Dragon Ball Z Bridge was happening, and the time I was still doing some YouTube stuff and like random dubs, I figured, okay, I want to sit down and actually like do a series proper. And I thought to myself, I was like, what is a good short thing that I enjoy? And this was during the time when I found JoJo in high school. And so then I found out that there was an OVA. I saw the last episode first. So already I was like, okay, but I know what it's leading up to. So there we go. And so since then I decided, you know what? Yeah, I'm going to do this because nobody else has done it. And
this was the old.
This was the old back in 1993/2001.
Wasn't even called Stardust Crusaders.
No, it was
called
not.
Wasn't it just called JoJo's Bizarre?
It was just JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. That was the most popular one at the time. So. That's the one.
Makes
that
sense.
Did you ever find the original Phantom Blood OVA?
That there.
I heard that's buried in a vault somewhere.
Somewhere.
The creator buried it as far deep as it could go.
Somebody does have the first 20 minutes. It's silent, but they have it for like a sound design course. So all. yeah. They managed to get the footage.
How bad does it look?
It's like. Speedwagon's not in it. That's all you need to
know. No Speedwagon.
No,
Speedwagon is sad.
Speedwagon can't be sad because Speedwagon doesn't exist.
Was he ever?
He's not real.
I'd like to take my turn to talk about why their decisions were better than mine. I chose G Gundam Abridged because the guy I was working with really wanted to work on it, thought it could be really funny, and it, I mean, it's G Gundam, out of all the Gundams, is one of the silliest, also one of my favorites, just because it's...
It is the best.
They tried to go for a Street Fighter vibe for it, and it worked. I really enjoyed G Gundam, and it's all, like, everyone's a stereotype.
Yeah, Neo Mexico is a floating sombrero.
I don't think it would fly nowadays.
Probably not.
Neo Egypt literally has, they have the Mecha Sphinx. It's like, it's some good high quality stuff.
Wasn't the Sweden?
They had a Windmill Gundam.
No, that was
Sailor Moon Gundam.
Sailor Moon Gundam was Neo Sweden. Yeah,
it would be. It would be a hot chick.
Yeah, no, and then she's like this fighter type, and then she starts crushing on Domo and the protagonist, who's like, ugh, ugh, because he's got like a dark past. It's great shit. And then there's Racer X. I mean Schwarzbruder, which means dark brother in German.
Yeah.
It turns out it's his brother. Great series, great franchise.
Wow.
They play it off like it's
so subtle.
They play it off like it's this big reveal. I'm like, they're legit. I could tell immediately,
Well, that's because even back then, when it was coming out, it was a trope.
So out of every joke you guys have ever done on either your own show or on Dragon Ball, what's your favorite joke you've ever done?
The one I keep going back to, it had two things for me. It had both good writing and pacing. Well, I guess it's three things. Good writing, good pacing, and it had good visual comedy. And that was in Lord Slug when Piccolo was beating up the orange guy.
Yeah.
Not like from the scene where it's like, please don't break my arm. Boom! Knocking him off the roof, running back in.
Running back in.
I'm going to wait down here, catch him off guard.
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, nothing. I'm just waiting for that green guy. I'm going to surprise him.
Neat.
Yeah, he'll never see.
Oh.
I remember we were watching the footage. I'm like, oh my god, wait.
Yeah, can we loop this?
No, it loops. The explosion's also in the same frame. They go back to that same frame. And they go, oh my god, we can loop
these.
No,
that was one of my favorite jokes. And it's just like it's a perfect storm of the footage working exactly how you need it to. And just being able to do this like Bugs Bunny-esque kind of gag with it.
I'd have to say Broly's first form and how he sounded. Probably just my favorite thing. Or even anything Android 16 says is like my favorite.
Because he's just so serious and doesn't really understand.
You can just say you love Remix. You can just say you really just
You know what? Yeah, there you go. Remix, he's my favorite joke.
We do love writing for him.
Yeah.
Oh my god, he's a fantastic performer. I really like the Cell Versus episodes where like, as me as an actor, that was fun as hell. That was like, oh boy, what do I got today? Cracks the knuckles.
Do you have a particular favorite Cell Versus?
It's kind of tied between two. I loved the Yu-Gi-Oh! One. Fist of the North Star.
I think is up there for me.
Remix. It's
once
like
again,
it's
remix.
We gotta go back to Remix. I really enjoyed that one. For Helsing, though, there's been a couple jokes in Helsing that I've just been like very proud of this one. Hey, kids, want to see a dead body? Pops to the wall. There's lots of little ones, but like for FF7, everything Barrett says. Also, just the raw audio of Purple Eyes recording for the doorman because it's longer than any episode. All right, okay. What is my line? Oh, sorry. Let me go in again. I'm like,
oh man, try the line. Oh man. I'm like, you could have had a blooper special just with him alone.
I really, really, we could have.
I mean, like, I'm going to secure funding. We're going to film a reality TV show, Falling Purple Eyes, as he's trying to fix a car.
if I could choose, like, a joke that is my favorite, that is, like, something that we did not do, his soup store scene is probably the greatest comedy scene I have ever seen.
It gets quoted. It's just a good. It was just. Apparently, it was just based on an actual story. I'm like, that actually happened?
Which character for each of you has been your favorite to voice?
Probably Krillin. It's fun to play punch drunk. Here's the thing. Krillin really runs the gamut of emotions, like, more so than any of the other characters I play. He's usually like just the most fun and the easiest on my voice to play in general.
I'd have to probably go with Barrett, because he's just...
Your friend my son, he's very crazy. He has a lot of fun with it.
And as I was, I'm realizing now that he has a few mannerisms of Samuel L. Jackson. And, yeah, because
sometimes I have to talk like this in case he needs to find out what's going on.
And then Morgan Freeman whenever he needs to get serious. So, yeah.
There was a time back in the day.
But no, Barrett's a lot of fun. He has a lot of crazy emotions. He's definitely a very, like, high-energy character, but can also be very subtle at times. Not a lot of times, but, you know, I enjoy him a lot. Plus, I write for him, so it helps.
Yeah, no, there you go. Like, I put Cell and Alucard in the same kind of realm, because they're very similar voices. Like, Cell's more projection, and Alucard's more deep in the chest.
Yeah.
As I play him, but there's this fun of playing it. With Alucard, it's like he knows he can't die, and he acts like it all the time, so he takes nothing seriously. And it's kind of fully fun building up the tension just for Alucard to, like, shit on it.
It's very fun to do that.
Perfect. I really love... While I love playing Perfect Cell, First Form Cell, I think, might be my favorite play character I've ever played. It hurt. Physically, I would leave every session going...
The scene where you were, like, talking to your cell... Like, when you're talking to Nicky Town is...
What's going on, Nicky Town? You're saying, "I'm Mr. Cell! You're so great! You should just love me!" Don't worry, I'm gonna get around to it. Right now, Mr. Town, just back off!
It's good, but I will say one of my favorite things to do, and especially after recording recently, Red 13.
It's good to be the day DAWG.
God is dog backwards.
It is.
Quad.
So what's your guys' process for making an abridged episode?
We sit down and, like, we watch through all the footage first. Like, it's usually kind of like a riff session where we're, like, throwing out jokes as we see them coming.
Mostly laughing at the wrong things we shouldn't be laughing at.
Yeah.
That's an inside joke.
I feel like it's more on the... It's sort of an inside joke. We do make fun of it a lot on the gaming stuff whenever we're playing Dragon Ball games as well.
It's the old Gohan voice.
Yeah. But we sit down, we review the episode, or the episodes that we're going to be covering, and then we just kind of start blocking out, okay, like, what are the main parts that we need to hit this episode? What are the big things that we need to get to, and what are some things that can be cut? We start making that list first, and then we...
argue.
We argue a lot.
We argue and bicker a fair amount.
And then we kind of go through and start trying to write the episode. The hardest parts are always figuring out what's going to be the first scene and what's going to be the last scene.
I think that's been from episode one to now that it's still to this day. The thing is, like,
it's because you, like, for that opening scene, you need something that's snappy and it needs to end on a bang.
It's like an essay.
Yeah,
and then the end of the episode needs to end with a. And with a good hook at the end, why don't you make you watch the next episode? It's like pacing. That's the one thing about writing this is it's taught us pacing better than anybody. And since we're working within the constraints of what we're limited footage we are given,
the limitations of using the footage is both a blessing and a curse. Because on one hand, while it does limit us to, like, okay, what are we able to do here? It also kind of gives us structure as to, like, okay, this is what we know we need to do.
Yeah. No. There'll be big bits we want to hit. For example, I think what we do is we come up with a lot of big joke.
And then we fill in the blanks.
Then we kind of, like, we start, like, almost like sewing it together, so to speak, with our, like, a design we want. And sometimes we'll strike upon a better joke while in the middle there. Yeah. Like,
and since a lot of this scripting can be very disjointed, and since it takes place over multiple days, usually we'll, once we're done with a first draft, that's when we go back in, we do a couple of read-throughs, and we figure out what's making some of these scenes work and what's making some of these scenes not work, and how can we improve this to make some of these others, like, for example, in the last episode, went back in and we fixed a couple of jokes just to... But specifically, there was a scene where somebody used the phrase, now you're speaking my language, and then we went back and there was this one thing where Goku's made like a sexual innuendo towards Cell, and there was just some benign line there, and I'm like, I just blurted out, now you're speaking my language, and it's like, oh, that makes that so much better.
Yeah, because... and then we wrote that back out a bit, immediately improved it.
Rewrites help a
no,
lot.
No, absolutely. Yes. Like, I think you can speak to, because when we scripted season one of Final Fantasy VII Mission and Bridge together.
No, there was a lot of rewrites in that. I remember there was one part, and because with FF7, it's video game footage, so it's a lot more limiting.
You can't just reanimate
it. Yeah, no, exactly. You have to make sure, like, this person's here, and then they go here, and here, and here, and here, and here. So it's like kind of playing chess, and they have to actually say something, so you need a reason for the person to either go there. One thing that we found out was there was one scene where Cloud needed to burst through...
The glass.
And yeah, we were just sitting there. And we cut
to the actual, like, footage from the game.
Yeah, and we were like, what is, like, what do we do? Like, blah, blah, blah. And then we were like, you know what, let's just sleep on it. So,
yeah,
like...
I remember we were like, let's just go to bed. Yeah. We were both kind of like, what do we do?
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, we slept down it. Still had some, like, ideas in my head that I was circling. And then I just remember sitting down and I was just, newscast. Because the footage is there, and if we already have the footage and the assets of the newscaster in the second episode, and we just, like, explain this is how people will now know.
I thought I came up with it.
We probably, like, collaborated.
This is how it always happens. Like, you sit down in a group and you write something, and it's like, oh, man, that was a great idea I had. And then somebody else will be like, wait, no, I thought of that. Well, come on, no, it was definitely...
I had a joke with Kaiser, we said in the call, and it was at your expense we made this joke.
Of course.
And we all making jokes. I'm like, so, and someone asked, like, who wrote that joke? Oh, I don't know, but I'm sure Lenny would love to take credit for it. And Kaiser spat his drink out over his screen.
You know what's funny? I came up with that
joke. Like, when you're in the middle of a writing room, sometimes there's big jokes you remember writing. Like, you remember some of your biggest jokes you've written. Like, for example, like the Vegeta Infinite Rage scene, I wrote that joke. That was my pitch. I'm proud as fuck of that. I can go to my grave going, oh, fuck, I wrote that scene. I did a good job. Like, a lot of the original, like, FF7 script, like, I kind of like, all right, here's all the pieces. Want to build a jigsaw puzzle with me, Ant?
Okay. We gotta hit the corners first.
I mean, let's we got two corners. We're fine. We're fine. We just keep building. Let's build up.
You gotta separate. Gotta keep the corner pieces in one.
And like, with like, for example, in Hellsing Ultimate Ridge, which I script with Kaiser, we can talk about the writing process all goddamn day, actually.
It's a majority of our job.
It is. Like, everyone's like, so it must be great to be like a full-time actor. That's not a thing. Not in our realm. Like, in the end, we just voice the scripts. Why? As a means to an end.
Yeah. We make our own work.
Yeah, there you go, right? But for Hellsing, what's interesting is I pretty much sit down and I rewatch the Hellsing episode 4 or 5 times. Then I sit down with Kaiser and I pitch my jokes to Kaiser. Kaiser's like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
No.
Yeah, yeah. No. And then we start building an episode. This episode actually coming out, episode 8. One of the things about it, I had another writer sit in on the sessions for these. I was joined by the man, HBI2K, who wrote Berserker Bridge and voices Alexander Anderson, wrote the Alexander Anderson episode with me. Writing is a collaborative process. Sometimes you want to just, I'm going to write the script myself. Props to those people. I would be terrified of writing my own script. And I've actually recently had to do that. And I miss my co-writers completely. I'm like, what do you think? It's just me. I hate it. Oh.
One of our most important questions that we like to ask, is a hot dog a sandwich?
Yes. Thank you.
I mean, I'd eat it, so.
But is it a sandwich?
There's actually a graph that going around that shows, like,
you mean propaganda.
Yeah, sometimes propaganda can be truth.
That's why you got us. We're the real news.
The real news from Thunder Bay.
Honestly, guys, if you guys don't step off, I'm going to body slam you.
Didn't we already agree that's how these...
I'd say, yes. Yeah. Every interview.
You're not running for Senator, Take. Just do that.
Yeah. That's
Well, welcome.
Well, you win it if you're running
welcome
for Senator.
Welcome to the parliamentary system, boy. How many chairs do you have?
But regardless, it is a piece of meat between two slices of bread.
Depends. Is there pineapple on it?
That doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you fill it with. It's between two pieces of bread. It's like a sausage
sandwich. It doesn't matter what you put
What designates a sandwich? How much bread coverage is on the actual meat?
The hot dog itself is not the sandwich. It is when you put it on the bun is when it is a sandwich.
sandwich.
Makes sense.
Like, because you can have a corn dog is essentially a hot dog.
Are you telling me
it's like a hot dog wrap?
So by that logic,
that was a part of the
hamburger is a sandwich. Then?
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
What? No, hamburger is a fucking hamburger.
Hold on.
Have you ever gone to a restaurant?
The original hamburger is called a Hamburg steak sandwich.
Have you ever been to a restaurant and seen the menu that says hamburgers/sandwiches?
Yeah, they're two separate sections.
No, one.
Okay, I was at Fuddruckers yesterday.
Oh, yes. Yes, Fuddruckers is like the high.
Yes, I am labeling it there. It says America's, like, the world's finest burgers. And then it says, if you want a combo with any sandwich. It doesn't say with any burger. It says with any sandwich, and they don't serve chicken.
So last thing we want to do with you guys, we love to play games here on Thunder Geeks. All we want is this or that. We're going to give you one of two options.
Gotcha.
Mm.
Are you a lover or a fighter?
Lover.
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 Marvel or DC?
Marvel.
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 Star Wars or Star Trek?
Star Wars.
Star Wars.
Star Wars.
Would you rather be eaten by a horde of gerbils or a flock of ducks?
Flock of ducks. They swallow.
I feel like I could kick off a bunch of gerbils.
I'll take the gerbils. The ducks are ducks don't have teeth. They're going to be pecking you to death. Enjoy that.
They have barbed dicks. I don't want anywhere near them.
You think they said mathematically,
some of them are going to get a little bit like
very.
But I'm not a duck. I think they'll be doing that with the other ducks.
Tacos or pizza?
Ooh, that
was there we go.
Tacos.
Pizza.
Damn, if it's Texas tacos.
Taco pizzas. Have you seen those?
Tacos?
No, they're like actually. Tacos? Imagine pizza, well, and then like, you just do it like this, and then you put shit in there.
Well, I mean, there's also like taco stuff on pizza, which is also.
Well, no, but I mean, using a pizza as a taco show.
Ooh, perfect. Remake.
Pirates or ninjas?
Pirates.
Like, are we fighting or are we?
Whatever. Ninjas.
Pirates are cool.
Burned to death or frozen to death?
They're both horrible. Frozen to death. Frozen to death because you just slowly drift off.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. Yeah
frozen. I'll take frozen.
Star Trek holodeck or Matrix headjack?
Ouch.
Holodeck.
Holodeck. I don't want anything jacking in my head.
Star Trek holodeck? What a silly question, good sir.
I mean, well, here's the thing. With the headjack, you can, like, you know, shink. Oh, okay, I can pilot
then
a helicopter.
Again.
Yeah, man, when they
like,
do,
download
like,
info.
When they do
that would feel good.
When they do the third Bill and Ted movie, and they will do a third Bill and Ted movie, they have to. When they do it, there has to be a scene where Bill just does a bunch of kung fu moves, and Ted's like, dude, how'd you do it?
Dude, I know kung fu.
Excellent.
Right. Would you rather wipe with sandpaper or poison ivy?
Oh, for the love of God. Sandpaper. Poison ivy.
Really?
They didn't say what ply of sandpaper. There's a consistency.
I don't think it matters.
It does. If you got 120 grit, then you're fine. But anything lower than that, it's going to be really rough.
Then I'm willing to roll that 120-sided die.
Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Dogs.
And our final question, who has the better booty, Peter Parker or Dick Grayson?
Dick Grayson.
That's tough. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Okay. I've seen that picture going around.
Oh, beautiful. Guys, thank you so much for joining us, and have yourself a great Anime North.
Thank you.
Welcome back, folks. Thank you so much for Team 4-Star. We do have some more interviews coming up from the fantastic Monica Rial and the awesome Greg Ayers. Stay tuned to 102.7 FM CILU around the world at luradio.ca, and we'll be right back.
As the COVID-19 pandemic continues to spread, it is important to stay safe. Coronavirus is now in Canadian provinces and territories. By law, if you have traveled abroad recently, you must self-isolate. To do your part, stay home as much as possible and practice social distancing. Try to maintain at least 2 meters away from others. Encourage those who are sick or showing symptoms to self-isolate or to seek medical attention. As always, wash your hands frequently, avoid touching your face, and practice good respiratory etiquette by covering your coughs and sneezes. Clean regularly used surfaces. COVID-19 symptoms can mimic colds and flu and include fever, cough, and difficulty breathing. Infected individuals may also have mild symptoms or none at all. For up-to-date information, check reliable sources like your local health authority or the Public Health Agency of Canada.
CILU is supported in part by the students of Lakehead University, our sponsors, and our listeners. At this time, we would like to thank the following sponsors for their continuous support.
Copperfin Credit Union, Northwestern Ontario's largest locally owned credit union. Experience the convenience of their mobile banking app and online financial solutions anywhere, anytime. Copperfin Credit Union, life forward. Sarah Curtin, your neighborhood realtor. She's on top of what's happening in Thunder Bay's market, and she'll help you buy or sell your home. Call or text her anytime at 632-3635 or find her online at sarahcurtin.com. The Walleye, the definitive source for information on music, food, art, and entertainment in Thunder Bay. This month's issue is on stands for free now. Find it around town or online and interactive at thewalleye.ca.
Never nap, full tracks, percussion and effects, snap, and you can't look back, keep a zigzag swivel, check my bowl over my brothers from the bottom to the middle to the top, climb ice, writing bubbles till they pop, won't stop, rad racer, fast pacer, robots, and goblins and ghosts, they die by the host, California gamer from the TNC coast. The close gaze in a battle toads feeder. Most would give way for this Mike Tyson beater. Knight, Simon leader, daytime castles for cowards. Got you shaking your controller like the plumber shoot bowler. Fire flowers for breakfast, strive force for dinner. So toss out the Genesis. Is you a winner? I never ending Contra. A master of blasters, a long distance zapper. Game until my hand shatter. Cartridge, A B, light gun, start select. The power, now's the hour for towering triumph, and I devour all the mediocre jokers never late to the hit. I'm throwing bows, Nintendo was level 8 to the bit. Dig it, I'm natural caliber, I may be select. High scoring, I'm soaring, and I may be the best. I confess, I got advantages and skills I'm trusting daily. Thrills of busting melee, chasing Justin Bailey. Cheat codes of opposers, and I don't need none. See me gun number one, each level a speed run. I leave nothing in my wake except impressions and empty chests. Every combo a conquest, and my record of many best. Challenge every day, cause I'm the man with the mastery. I won't fake you, must break you. I admire your audacity. While tacitly I respect, vocally I destroy and shatter anyone who ever calls my NASA a toy. Cartridge, A B, light gun, start select. Robot, A B, D pad, safe reset. Cartridge, A B, light gun, start select. I glide, duck hunting, bubble bobbling just to survive. It's my pride, my raisin dip, the very blood in my veins. Changing lanes like RC Pro, I'm Nova Code like my brain. Urban champion battling, I'm rock and rolling, snake rattling. Gyro mighty balloon fighting, goonies two gun like Gatling. Kung fuing, I ruin your clue cluing. Don't crack, don't stack, don't know what you're doing.
Pick your brother, William or James, Luigi or Mario, Striker or Blade, Mega or Proto, what's in a name? Brothers of Snow, Dragons of Flame, three-letter names stacked in Hall of Fame. Fuck a report card, high scores that I claim. Afternoons, weekends, calluses, trains, go Nintendo hard or shut off this game.
And we're back. You're listening to Thunder Geeks, brought to you by 102.7 FM, CILU, or around the world at luradio.ca. That was Death Star with Nintendo Hard. Of course, we're away from the studio this week, so we are bringing some fantastic interviews from our past and icon guests of the now. So next up we have is Monica Rial.
Monica Rial, oh gosh, I actually really enjoyed this interview. Mostly for the fact that Monica Rial reminds me so much of Alicia. And I really, really wish Alicia was coming with us so I could get them in the same room at the same time. And then it would cause like this Alicia-Monica time paradox.
Oh, she's really right.
She acts exactly like Alicia.
I hadn't realized that. Maybe that's why Greg remembers Alicia so well. Because in Greg's interview later, he actually talks about Monica Rielle and how they've been friends for so long. And it wasn't until after Greg's interview I realized, oh yeah, we've interviewed Monica before.
Yeah, we have. That could exactly be why.
My favorite part of the interview is where she iterates the fact that she played Brutus in a, like, Caesar play. And I just... Let's stab Caesar! Because that's actually her voice. She speaks like this, and it's just so entertaining to listen to her. I could listen to her talk for days.
I'm really excited to see her again, just because she's been doing so many more roles and quite a few more that I've attached to. Froppy from My Hero Academia is just the best girl.
Agreed. I think it's actually the first time you and I have agreed on best girl.
Really? Wow. This is a new development.
9 times out of 10, it's Andrew usually picks, like, the ditzy small one that's a tsundere.
The cute, you mean the cute and perfect one?
So, yeah, that's where we usually fight. So, the fact that Andrew and I agree on Froppy is... That's actually a shock to me.
Isn't that pretty much Froppy?
No, Froppy...
Is being, like, the cute little girl?
But she's not mean.
No. She's wholesome, but she's not super cutie. I don't think they have a super cutie character unless we count...
Gravity Girl.
Uraraka.
She's Girl Next Door. She is Girl Next Door. You have Girl Next Door. The sexy one that makes things from her boobs. I forget what her name is. I forget Momo, thank you. I forget most of the characters' names.
Me too.
The closest one to cutie is the tummy laser boy that I like. Again, I need to look up character names. They have all left my head because season 4 is not here yet. I will remember character names during the season. After that, it's by their power.
I think it's Deku. Deku's definitely, like, the weird cutesy one.
I mean, do you remember all the scenes where he's talking to Uraraka on the phone and he's just like, oh, I'm talking to a girl?
You know, you might not be wrong. I think Deku is, in fact, best girl.
Yes.
She does get to play, like, the cutesy girl, though, Monica, because she gets to take the mantle as Sakura in the new Cardcaptors.
Yeah, the Clear Card Saga.
Yeah. So now she gets to be another cutesy girl, and I can't wait to see her again. Yes! I'm wondering what color her hair is going to be this time, because in all of her photos, she has different colored hair, and when we met her, it was like this really plum purple color. So I'm like, ooh, I wonder what color it's going to be this time.
Well, folks, we're going to head to our interview, and here's Monica Rielle.
Welcome, Monica. How's it going?
Pretty good.
Good. So, I guess first things first, how did you get into the voice acting?
I got into voice acting by a fluke. Totally unexpected. I was an actor in Houston, Texas, and I was going to the University of Houston. And funny bit of trivia, I went to college with Jim Parsons, who plays Sheldon on The Big Bang Theory. So it's kind of funny because it's like this weird circle of Jim and Jason Douglas, who plays Tobin on Walking Dead, and Lord Beerus, and we all went to college together. It was very strange. But while I was there, Jason and I were doing, I think it was Cymbeline, it's a Shakespeare show, and he was like, hey, I'm doing this thing in Houston for animation, and you should totally do it. And at first he said cartoons, and I was like, oh, okay, sweet. I didn't know that we did that in Houston. I thought that was all L.A. And he showed me his keychain, and it was like Marin from Sorcerer Hunters one of the little people from Sorcerer Hunters. I'm like, oh, it's not just cartoons, it's anime. Like, my brother's a huge anime fan. This would be really cool. So I auditioned, and it was kind of like the planets aligned properly or something, because I called on like a Wednesday and they were having auditions that weekend. And so I went and auditioned. They waited like 3 or 4 months and called me in for Walla. And then I got a lead, and then it just kind of kept going. And I kept joking. I'm like, okay, eventually they'll get tired of me. And they didn't. So yeah, it was kind of a fluke. I kind of stumbled into it thanks to Jason Douglas.
Awesome.
He kind of pulled me in, I guess.
He's like a mentor.
Yeah, exactly. And I credit him with that all of the time. And he's just like, oh, psh. I'm like, no, seriously, I wouldn't be doing this if it weren't for Lord Beerus, as weird as that.
Do you yourself have any, like, little young Padawans?
Yes, Tia Ballard. Tia Ballard came in and auditioned for me for Nobari No-O. She'd never done any anime or voice acting before. Dave Trosko, who is another director at Funimation, at the time he was just a voice actor, and he sent her in. And so it was the end of the day, and I'm like, oh, fine, okay, come in, person I've never seen before. And she came in and she did a really good job and was like, okay, well, let me put up some flaps and let's see if you can match. And she was not too bad at it. But the only role I had was for like a lead girl. And I wasn't quite ready to take somebody off the street and be like, here's the lead. So I told everybody at Funimation, I'm like, hey, this girl's really good. You should bring her in for Wall and stuff so I can use her later on. And they were all like, she's in your voice range. Why would you do that? And I'm like, because I'm not a
cool. Yeah. Like, I want to give people a shot.
Yeah,
too.
There's plenty of work to go around, and and so she says that all the time. She's like, "Good work, Monica." So it's nice to kind of pass it along. So now Tia has to find somebody to do the same.
Okay. We know that you've been many, many roles. You said close to 500 throughout the day.
Yeah.
What roles do you think are most challenging for you? Like,
definitely the grown-ups.
The grown-ups.
Like whenever I use my big girl voice, as I like to call it, those are more challenging only because this is my natural voice. So this is like default.
Pushing it like way down in here. You can even hear it cracking because I didn't warm up this morning.
But normally like I'll warm up, but it takes a lot of breath support to keep it down there. And a lot of times, like, you know, I'm thinking about Umi Heavy and Snow White with the red hair. Like, she's a pirate queen, so everything is yelled. So it takes a lot of breath support to just talk like that. And then to yell like that is like, it's really, really hard. Michiko and Hachin, there were many, many times where I felt like I was going to pass out. Then Bulma, too, because she's, even though she's not incredibly low, she's still lower than my natural voice and takes kind of a fullness to her. Like, she's got more of a, I don't even know how to describe it. Yeah,
it just takes up more space.
Takes a lot more space. So she takes a lot of breath support too. So those are the most difficult, I would say.
A lot of people don't really realize how much like core strength that actually takes.
Yes. That's why I get a lot of voice, like people who want to be voice actors and they're like, what can I study other than acting?
Breathing.
Breathing. I tell them singing a lot of times because it teaches you to breathe from your diaphragm and, you know, how to breathe full of air and get all the air out. And it also helps with reads, because a lot of times people come in and everything sounds really flat because they're like, I'm on a microphone and this is what I do on stage, and you'd be able to take the visual cues.
I am a robot.
Exactly. So with the music classes and singing classes, they get that musicality to their voice.
You said you were in theater before, and you said you're Shakespeare?
Shakespeare and musical theater were my two big
things. Well, like, what was your favorite production that you were in?
Oh gosh, I was in an all-female version of Julius Caesar, and I played Brutus, which was pretty awesome. Of course, I used this voice, and not this voice, because that would have been...
Okay,
that would have been pretty awesome, though.
Just... Yeah. I look at my muscles.
Right.
But...
Hi! Hail Caesar! But yeah, that was one of my favorites. I also did, oh gosh, I've done Taming of the Shrew like 3 times, but I always play Bianca, which makes me upset. I really want to play Kate someday. I did a production of Cymbeline with Jason Douglas. That was a lot of fun playing Imogen. So yeah, I've done a lot of Shakespeare, a lot of musical theater, because they always tell you that if you're an actor on stage, those are the two places where you make the most money. So I was like, sweet, I'm going to be really good at those two things. So that's all I did for a long time. And then anime found me and took me away.
Just kidnapped you.
Just kidnapped me. Put me in the trunk, and here I am now.
So I imagine through your career, you've been to many conventions and things like that.
Yeah.
How do you think it's impacted the life of voice actors, like when you go to conventions, like seeing the faces of the fans and actually being able to connect with them?
It's so cool. Like, you know, somebody asked yesterday if I consider the conventions part of my job. And while yes, it is a part of the job, because it is kind of like I'm promoting all of the things that I'm in and I'm going out and telling you about all the new services and subscribe to Funimation and blah, 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 which is all great. But it also is about connecting with the people who watch the shows. I get, like, there's heart-wrenching stories that people come up and are like, this is how this show has touched my life, or this is how this show. Yesterday, there's a wonderful young man named Callum who's in the process of recovery, and his mom was like, I don't think you understand how much this, you know, what you've done has affected him and helped him recover. And I'm like, tears. You know, I had one guy tell me once that, you know, his mother was dying in the hospital and she wanted to spend some time with him, and they watched anime together, and he's like, I just wanted to thank you for making my mom laugh before she passed. And I'm like, woo-hoo.
Oh my god.
So it's the stories like that, though, where you go, hey, maybe what I'm doing is more than just being an actor and being an anime. Maybe I am actually touching lives, and how can I do that and be the best person that I can be and spread optimism and happiness and hopefully touch people's lives in that way so that they in turn go out and spread more optimism and happiness. So yeah, I've kind of taken it as, well, it is part of the job. It's also very therapeutic for me because it's like, hey, I get to go out there, meet people, show them that not all actors are jerks. You know, a lot of us are really humble and down to earth and cool. And also, you know, talk to people and get feedback because we don't ever, you know, we go and record and then it's sent out into the ether. Mm. We sometimes forget that, oh yeah, people watch this and they love it and they care about it. So it's nice to hear that from people when they come up and they're like, hey, really enjoy what you do. And it's a huge deal for us because it kind of keeps us motivated.
I know the feeling, myself being one of those people, like I lived through Dragon Ball for like my entire life, and I still watch Super, like as soon as the episodes come out, like all of that, and I've
huge impact.
And you don't think about it when you're in the middle of it, and then, you know, all of a sudden it's like people come up, I'm like, holy crap, we really did make a difference. Mm-hmm. Or people grew up with us, listening to us. Like, even Jason Douglas's daughter, she's like, you were the voice of Hello Kitty and Hello Kitty's Animation Theater. I'm like, yeah. And she's like, I grew up listening to you all the time. Oh my gosh, I love you. And I was like, thanks. That's so cute. So you never know who you're gonna touch and whose lives you're gonna touch. So it's really special. I love coming to the conventions and meeting folks for that.
You've also been an ADR scriptwriter. Mm-hmm. What are some of the challenges you have in adapting the anime?
Japanese humor.
Some of the little...
Oh, gosh. Or... Well, they're really big on puns, but the problem is that their puns don't translate because Japanese and English are like apples and oranges. Mm-hmm. So if I... Usually they'll be like, hey, I say this word in Japanese. Oh, that's funny. I'm going to say this word because it sounds like that word, and there's going to be a miscommunication, and there's a giant pink elephant on the screen, which is funny in Japanese, and everybody goes, ha, 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 ha. And then I look at it and go, ripe... And, you know, electricity. Those don't sound anything alike. Nor is there any reason for a pink elephant. So then it's my job to go, okay, I have to make something funny. Try to make it wordplay if I can. So it's the same kind of idea. Incorporate the pink elephant and make it funny enough that all the characters going, have a reason to actually laugh. So that's probably the hardest part. There are sometimes when the Japanese humor just doesn't translate. I'm working on a show called Love Tyrant right now, which I absolutely love. But there's a part where one of the characters shows up in a shrimp costume. And she's like, and in Japanese, I can't even remember what the pun was, but it was something very obscure and very strange. And I'm like, nobody's going to get that. Nobody's going to understand that at all. What can I do? What can I do? It has to be funny. It has to be a pun. So I had her come in and go, it's hard out there for a shrimp. And I thought, I gave plenty of alternate lines just in case. I was like, here are your other alternates just in case you hate this one. But they went with that one. And I've gotten several people on Twitter that are like, oh my God, that was hilarious. I'm like, oh, thank God. Oh, good. Because it's like, you can spend, now we only get 2 days to turn around a script, mm-hmm. which is unbelievably fast. It used to be that you could spend a lot of time ruminating and figuring out things like on Fairy Tail. I had all the time in the world to go, okay, how am I going to make this work? Because it just doesn't work. Now, there really isn't a lot of time. Luckily, Love Tyrant has the manga and it follows pretty closely. So I can go back and forth between the two and kind of connect the dots if necessary. Definitely the humor is probably the hardest thing. Any kind of wordplay. The drama series tend to be a lot easier. The one thing is also knowing the language enough to understand how it's different intricacies. Because sometimes you get a really great translator where you don't have to do really anything other than just make sure it fits the flaps. They'll leave you notes about what everything means. And then sometimes you get that translator that maybe just started. And you'll notice that all the ends of the sentences are at the beginning, like all the sentences are flipped because that's how they do in Japanese. And so, and things just won't quite make sense. And so that's when it gets really difficult too.
Yeah, because I feel like the comedy in Panting Stocking was very like, there's a pink elephant in the room. So like, I can imagine that you ran into some kind of like,
wall-like. Yeah, Jamie Markey, who plays Panty, did the adaptions for those. And it was pretty awesome because Gainax came to Funimation and they were like, look, we get it. We understand that your humor is totally different than our humor. We don't want you to do just a straight translation of what we did. Mm-hmm. We want you to keep the story and everything, but please make it funny. I think they told her, like, like, make it as funny as possible or as raunchy as possible within the realms of U.S. law. So she's like, sweet, I could do that. So, and she thought about things like, you know, like the F word. The F word in Japan is a big deal because it's kind of foreign and it's like punchy, punchy. Well, here you watch HBO for 5 minutes and you'll hear it 10 times. So she had to find other ways to make it more, we still said it a lot, but she had to come up with other words to make it even more punchy and more abrupt and in your face. I think she did a brilliant job, and I apparently they did too, because that's the first time that we've ever been on a Japanese Blu-ray. They put our dub on their Japanese Blu-ray release, which I thought that was so cool. I'm in Japanese people's living room. And it's fun because every once in a while I'll get a very obviously like Google translated email from somebody who's like panty stocking. Nice job. And I'm like, okay, thank you. I don't even know how to reply to you. Thanks.
It's always good to get some sort of feedback that's positive.
The worst part is I got an email from one gentleman in Japan who was fantastic, but he was using panty and stocking to learn English.
Great choice to learn.
I could just imagine him going around town being like, hey, shit pickle, yay! I'm like, no. No, probably not a good choice.
Is a hot dog a sandwich?
Oh my god.
These are the hard questions.
I've never even contemplated whether a hot dog is a sandwich.
It's a thought that not too many people have come across.
Right? Because, okay, here's how I would go with it. My brain, just to give you an insight on where my brain goes, at first I'm like, okay, it's not a sandwich because the bread is attached. But then if you think about it, like po' boys in New Orleans, the bread is attached. So then does that make that a sandwich? Or is that a po' boy? I'm going to say no.
Oh.
It's a hot dog.
It's a hot dog. It's like its own separate
It's its own
genre.
Thing. Yeah.
Thank you.
I think. I'm not sure, but I'm going to go with that.
It's an argument within us, too, and I'm strongly against it being a sandwich. It's a hot dog.
I mean, because otherwise they'd be like, hey, hot dog sandwich, right?
I'm not
sure. Another thing we like to do too is we go this or that questions. Like we give you two options and just pick one.
Ooh, this
and it's
is
like
fun.
Rapid fire
Sweet.
Question kind
okay.
of thing.
Yeah.
So first things first, are you a lover or a fighter?
I'm a lover.
Lover? Marvel or DC?
Oh, I suck at this.
She's a Libra, man.
Where
She's
okay?
Just like
Iron Man.
Iron Man.
Only because of Robert Downey Jr. I love him.
True. Star Wars or Star Trek?
Oh, Star Wars.
Awesome. And would you rather be eaten by a horde of gerbils or a flock of ducks?
Ooh, gerbils. At least they have teeth. It would hurt them faster.
We had a question before where someone was like, do ducks have teeth? Or would they just sit there like
they would just slap
you for a while?
Forever. Can you imagine?
Tacos or pizza?
Oh, that's a hard one. I'm gonna go with pizza.
Pirates or ninjas?
Oh, ninjas. I hate pirates. I have a weird thing about pirates, you guys. I can't even go see Pirates of the Caribbean.
Really?
It's really?
Very strange. It's not like J. Michael Tatum and clowns, but I have my own weird... I was probably, like, drowned in a past life
or
walked
no.
a plank or something, but I don't like pirates. It's weird.
That's fair.
One Piece is fine. I just said no pirates.
Burned to death or frozen?
Ooh. Frozen? Like, is it fast freeze?
It could be, like, carbonite. Like,
yeah, if it's a fast freeze, then great.
Dip like
I
Luke.
Still think that would be... I think your system would shut down... This is me and my brain. I think your system would shut down faster with the cold. Because the fire, you're gonna... I mean, I guess you feel it either way, but ow.
Most people find it related to just kind of peacefully going, but cold.
Right? Yeah.
But cold. Pancakes or waffles?
Belgian waffles.
Ooh.
Wait, Belgian waffles?
Like the big, puffy ones?
Yeah.
Star Trek holodeck or Matrix headjack?
I don't even know what those mean.
Oh, no. Okay, so...
Star Trek holodeck.
Yeah, a virtual reality that you can walk around or an internal virtual reality that's in your head.
No, I'd rather walk around.
Walk around?
All right, there you go.
I don't want it in my head.
So would you rather wipe with sandpaper or poison ivy?
Sandpaper.
Cats or dogs?
Oh.
These are the hard ones.
I'm going to go with cats because I have a cat named Michael Jackson.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And our most talked about question that we usually have, who has the better booty? Nightwing, or Dick Grayson, or Peter Parker, Spider-Man?
Which Peter Parker?
Oh, that's
like, are we talking
question.
Like movie Peter Parkers?
Let's go Tom Holland, because he's the current guy.
Tom Holland, is he the young guy?
Yes.
And who plays the other?
I don't think Nightwing's
had Okay, well then I'm going to go... No offense, Peter Parker. I'm going to go with Nightwing because that guy's young and I feel weird.
Did you see his... Whoops. Did you see his lip sync battle?
No, I haven't watched that show in forever. That looks like so much fun.
It's amazing.
I agree. I love the show completely.
I want to do that. I'll have to check it out.
So I think that's everything from us.
I believe so.
Awesome. Well, thank you. Oh. That was super fun.
Thank you very much.
Glad.
I like it. You guys have great questions. Thank you.
And we're back. Thank you again to Monica Riel. She was so much fun to talk to. And again, we are so excited to see her again at Icon. And we will let you know next week. Coming up, we of course have our interview with Greg Ayres. But folks, thank you so much for tuning in. We're your Thunder Geeks. And this is brought to you by 102.7 FM CILU. Around the world at luradio.ca. We'll be right back.
Sponsored in part by the students of Lakehead University, our listeners, and our sponsors. At this time, we would like to thank the following sponsors for their continuous support.
The Foundry at 242 Red River Road, open 11 a.m. to 2 a.m. Monday to Saturday, featuring folk and Mondays, karaoke Tuesdays, trivia Wednesdays, open stage Thursdays, and live music weekends. Find out more at thefoundrypub.com. The Thunder Bay Symphony Orchestra. Log on to tbso.ca or call 626-TBSO for details on the 2019-2020 season and how to get tickets. The Lakehead University Student Union, promoting action, advocacy, and service by bringing you student centers. Learn more by visiting their office in the tunnels of the student center or by logging on to lusu.ca.
And we're back. You're listening to Thunder Geeks, brought to you by 102.7 FM CILU, or around the world at luradio.ca. That was Beat Crusaders with Hit in the USA from the anime series Beck. That was the first role that I ever got to experience Greg Ayers in, and I think the first anime marathon I ever saw on TV. Like, I was flipping through the channels, and then on Much Music, this weird show called Beck came up. I didn't even know it was only an episode 2. I just lucked out into tuning into around the beginning, and I sat and watched it for the rest of the day.
Finding anime on TV for me was really difficult because I didn't have YTV or Teletoon, and the fact that it was suddenly on Much Music all the time, I was so excited, and I was just like, oh my gosh, an anime, finally. And I binge-watched it, and it became one of my favorites. I showed it to all my friends after I bought the DVD, like, collection, and I have it still. So that was probably my first exposure to him as well.
A cool thing about Beck as well, it's a bittersweet. They did record an entire album of music, and Ayers has a copy. He used to play it for people at Icon until someone snuck a recorder in and, like, recorded it and kind of bootlegged an awful quality to the end. And Greg's also, like, he's really passionate about bootlegs. He's the one that got Alicia so, you know, fired up about, you know, merch in the dealer's room possibly being filled with asbestos. Only by official plushies, folks.
Asbestos? No.
Just a casual asbestos.
I'm not going to lie. Like, halfway through that Greg Ayers interview, I wanted to scream, oh, you're Lord Frost! Because it just, like, I knew I recognized his voice from something recent. I'm just thinking. And in the back of my mind, I screamed that. Like, if you were looking at me at that point, I just went bug-eyed staring at him.
Yeah, I love that he enjoys getting that role so much since his brother is Frieza. So it works so well.
He's also Gildo from way back when.
I didn't know Gildo. He was.
Yeah, from the original Dragon Ball.
Time Freeze.
Yeah. With his little, like, psycho javelins.
Who wants a dog biscuit?
The kind of dog I want is the Ayers dog. Unfortunately, we're missing some key ingredients. He goes through this entire specific recipe about the perfect Greg Ayers hot dog. The problem is the brands of hot dogs he names off, and yes, he goes into hog brand specificity. We don't have here, so we need to have a heist where we smuggle some wieners over the American border.
I'm not even going to go there, but I will say one quick thing. We didn't actually say this because it was post-interview. He recommended a hot dog place for us, and we had the Slum Dog.
I know, it is in the interview. We got the directions.
Yeah.
His hot dog recommendation, guys, if you're ever in Winnipeg, check out this place. I just hope they still have the Slum Dog. It was beautiful. But we're going to let Greg Ayers tell you more about that, guys. We'll be right back. And we're back. You're listening to Thunder Geeks, brought to you by 102.7 FM CILU, or around the world at luradio.ca. That was the Beat Crusaders with Hit in the USA, and Beck with I've Got a Feeling. Of course, that was the first role that I ever got to experience Greg Ayers in, and I think the first anime marathon I ever saw on TV, like, I was flipping through the channels, and then on Much Music, this weird show called Beck came up. I didn't even know it was only an episode 2. I just lucked out into tuning into around the beginning, and I sat and watched it for the rest of the day.
Finding anime on TV for me was really difficult because I didn't have YTV or Teletoon, and the fact that it was suddenly on Much Music all the time, I was so excited, and I was just like, oh my gosh, an anime, finally. And I binge-watched it, and it became one of my favorites. I showed it to all my friends after I bought the DVD, like, collection, and I have it still. So that was probably my first exposure to him as well.
A cool thing about Beck as well, it's a bittersweet. They did record an entire album of music, and Ayers has a copy. He used to play it for people at Icon until someone snuck a recorder in and, like, recorded it and kind of bootlegged an awful quality to the end. And Greg's also, like, he's really passionate about bootlegs. He's the one that got Alicia so, you know, fired up about, you know, merch in the dealer's room possibly being filled with asbestos. Only by official plushies, folks.
Asbestos? No. Wow!
Just a casual asbestos.
I'm not gonna lie, like, halfway through that Greg Harris interview, I wanted to scream, oh, you're Lord Frost! Because it just, like, I knew I recognized his voice from something recent. I'm just thinking. And in the back of my mind, I screamed that. Like, if you were looking at me at that point, I just went bug-eyed staring at him.
Yeah, I love that he enjoys getting that role so much since his brother is Frieza, so it works so well.
He was also Gilda from way back when.
I didn't know Gilda. He was...
Yeah, from the original Dragon Ball.
Time Freeze.
Yeah.
Dang.
With his little, like, psycho javelins.
Who wants a dog biscuit?
The kind of dog I want is the heir's dog. Unfortunately, we're missing some key ingredients. He goes through this entire specific recipe about the perfect Greg Ayers hot dog. The problem is the brands of hot dogs he names off, and yes, he goes into hot dog brand specificity. We don't have here, so we need to have a heist where we smuggle some wieners over the American border.
I'm not even going to go there, but I will say one quick thing. We didn't actually say this... because it was post-interview, he recommended a hot dog place for us, and we had the Slum Dog.
I know, it is in the interview. We got the directions.
Yeah.
His hot dog recommendation, guys, if you're ever in Winnipeg, check out this place. I hope they still have the Slum Dog. It was beautiful. But we're going to let Greg Ayers tell you more about that, guys. We'll be right back. Hello, so we're your Thunder Geeks live at Icon, and we are here with the wonderful Greg Ayers.
Hello.
Tell our listeners who aren't familiar with you just a little about yourself.
I'm a very old guy that sounds like a little kid. I mainly make a living playing young pointy-haired boys in Japanese animated TV series. I guess I could throw out some roles. I'm one of the two twins in Oran High School Host Club. I'm Negi Springfield in Negima, Chrono and Chrono Crusade. I guess for listeners in Canada, I'm Koyuki in Beck, which... I was super excited that Beck was premiered in Canada before it was even played in the States, the dub was. And now, most recently, I am one of the newest villains in the Dragon Ball universe, Frost. But yeah, and it's kind of cool because my brother is the voice of Frieza, so it's kind of funny to play the little bluer version of my brother's character.
Now, I believe you said in your panel you started in musical theater.
Yep.
How did that come about?
Actually, like everything in my life, that was even an accident. like I talk about, you know, getting into voice acting, it was an accident. I was in gymnastics. I was on a junior Olympic team, actually. I was super hyperactive as a kid. And my brother is one of those kids that came out of the womb with a top hat and a cane. Like, he was just always going to be a performer. He's been on Broadway twice. And, I mean, he's known since he was a baby that he wanted to be a performer. I was in the parking lot when he was auditioning for The King and I. And he was just auditioning to be one of the king's children. And I was just doing, like, cartwheels and handsprings and aerials in the parking lot. I was just, like, running around and flipping in the parking lot. And apparently the director came up to my mom and dad and were like, hey, when is he coming in to audition? And my mom said, oh, no, our other son's an actor. That's Chris Ayers. He's already seen you. And he goes, yeah, but what is he doing? And my mom goes, that's just what he does. He flips around a lot. And so they're like, well, we could use somebody with acrobatic skills. So literally my first audition was just doing flips. Just came in and did flips for a bunch of casting people, and that was it. But then once I did it, you know, it's cool to be 7 years old and be dressed up as like a little Siamese kid and put on a fancy costume and then still get to do what I normally do, which is run around and flip, you know, flip-flop on everything. So then I just kind of haphazardly fell backwards into theater, and I enjoyed it, and I found out I had a really good singing voice, and so then I got to do lots of like super... I also found out I have a very strange male voice. Like, as I got older, I'm a countertenor, which is a high tenor that also sings in a woman's operatic range. So then I got to do, just like in anime, I got to do a lot of weird singing roles because I have this trick voice. So yeah, that's how I started. And then I know Monica Rial and Chris Patton from theater. Chris Patton used to come to the nightclub I used to work at, but I knew Monica from theater. We were all doing a play together called Runaways. And right soon after that is when ADV Films was casting Spriggan. And they needed someone to sound like a 10-year-old boy. And Monica was like, oh my God, call my friend. He works at a law firm. He sounds like he's 12 years old. And so my audition was just my voicemail at work. They just called one night at like 2 in the morning and just listened to my voicemail. But that's kind of how I haphazardly fell into the industry even. So yeah, accident. Happy, to quote Bob Ross, a happy accident. Yeah.
What was your most challenging role?
Negi Springfield. Man, look, no hesitation there. Negi Springfield in the show Negima. British accent part was super easy. I grew up watching British television. I still have a special cable package where I have 35 channels of British television. Addicted to British game shows and cooking shows and all that. So, like, the accent was great. I love studying regional accents, but he's a 9-year-old boy who is terrified of all the women he's surrounded by. And so when we originally started the role, and I don't know if I'm going to even, I probably can't do the highest version of the voice, but when we started the role, his voice more sounded just whispery and childlike. It was like, hello, everyone. My name is Negi Springfield. I am your new teacher. Like, very simple. Well, so they took that and pitched it up two semitones. And so when I asked for a ref disc, which is a disc, because we did the first episode and then they waited and then they did stuff and then we went back and recorded the rest. The ref disc they gave me was pitched up and no one told me that. So that's what I was rehearsing with. So when I went in, it was this squeaky voice and that was fine until I had to start screaming in Latin. And I'm like, whoa. It's like, here's the highest part of my voice. Like, I have no ceiling now. You've like got me right at the ceiling of my voice. So yeah, like, I've always made the joke, like, I hope I get to go back and do an episode of Negi's, you know, Negima, where he hits puberty and his voice changes, because I love the character, I love Ken Akamatsu, and I love the show. I just hate that voice, and it really hurts. And the only thing to come a second close was in Gantz, I play a 16-year-old serial killer, and at some point he gets set on fire, and he screams for almost 2 minutes straight.
Ooh.
And like, it's one of those things actors love to say, like, oh, well, you have to protect your voice. There's a special way to scream. There is no guarded way of screaming that sounds like you're on fire. Like, there's only one way to be on fire, and that is scream your bloody lungs out. What I always shoot for is like believability, and like, I wanted it to sound like it was on fire. The other problem is we had a director who was a perfectionist, so I did it about 15 times. And like, Tiffany Grant was in that session. She was actually waiting. She was in the next session. And she would be like, please don't make him do that again. And every time I would scream, she would go, ah, and just hold her throat. Like, she would put her hand over her throat because she said it was hurting just listening to it. The work is fun. It's the challenges of pushing your vocal cords. It's like being an athlete, only I only have this muscle here, you know, just my throat to worry about.
What's your favorite thing to wear on the job? So what do you like to wear when you're voice acting?
Man, I love to take my shoes off at work. That's what I like to not wear. The booths at Funimation, the whisper booths, are like padded. So, man, you take your shoes off and it's like you're in a big, like, slipper. Like, it's like standing in a big slipper. I mean, the best thing about my job, I used to work in a law firm where I had to be dressed in a suit every day. And now I wear whatever I want to work. If I feel like looking scummy, you know, I can just show up in an old band shirt and ripped up jeans. Or if I want to impress somebody with some new clothes, you know, like, there's no limit to what I can or can't wear. I learned that you don't wear your pajamas to work, though, because I did that 1 year. And the day that I decided it would be a cute idea to wear my pajamas to work was the day they brought the Japanese in. And so there I stood in my pajamas, and they're like, wait, I guess you can't see that over the microphone. Wait, wait. And I'm like, oh, God. And even worse is they took a picture of me that day, because they're like, oh, we'll get a picture of, you know, Yoshimatsu-san. And that's the picture they blew up and put on my booth at AX. So this is a picture of me looking very tired going, and that was the picture they blew up. So I think you should never. And then one time I was at a con and I thought it'd be funny because they put me on a 10 o'clock panel. I thought it'd be funny to show up in my pajamas. I didn't shower even. I just went straight in my pajamas to look like I woke up in the room. I got there early and laid across the table. So when they got there, I was asleep on the table. And the hotel caught on fire. And I was stuck.
Oh, jeez.
I was stuck. I couldn't get back to my room. And I was stuck, filthy, unwashed, unteeth brushed, in my pajamas until like 4 o'clock that afternoon. I was like, man, what is it with me in my pajamas? So like, don't ever wear your pajamas to work, ever.
Now, you've become a bit famous for your colorful hair.
Yeah.
What was your favorite hair color you've done, or hairstyle?
I don't know. Like, it's so weird. I mean, I love my leopard skin mohawk. I had a red mohawk that had leopard spotted sides, and I like that. My favorite hairdo is the one I didn't get to do. And now, because of, like, cultural standards, I think it probably is impossible. back once upon a time when, you know, white people could get a braid or a weave and nobody would say anything, I really had this idea of getting reflective silver extensions in like a braided, like braided like hairdo.
Reflective
silver dreads and wear all white so I look like the creepy twins in The Matrix. But like, I would have foiled the plan myself because I'm a grubby little kid. Like, you could wash me and put me in the middle of a bed and I would have dirty fingernails in like 10 minutes. So like, I think the all white outfit was probably a bad idea from the jump, but I always wanted to do that with my hair. Right now I'm rocking this weird calico blonde. One of my friends is like, you should dye your hair gray. And I'm like, man, I got gray. I got real gray. And then I bleach my hair and the gray kind of comes into a cool way. So I'm like enjoying like a more natural weird hair right now. But I'm thinking about doing something else to my hair pretty soon, but I'm waiting. I'm saving it. Kind of all got messed up for me because I saw a girl with purple hair in a Trump shirt and I was like, nope, that's it.
Nope.
That's it. This purple hair is over. So, but there's a bunch of colors that I haven't done yet. Like, I haven't done indigo. Indigo is my favorite color, but I haven't found a good hair dye that's that color. And that's the issue with hair is like, it's sometimes what the box looks like is not the color you end up with on your head. Because I once tried to dye like a really beautiful deep forest green and it came out like lawn green, like grass green. And I was like, wow, I look like a Christmas tree. Like, so, but yeah, so I'll wait. I don't know. We'll see what my next do happens.
Now, of course, we got to see how hype of a DJ you are.
Oh my gosh.
How did you get into like the DJ career?
So I've been doing that almost as long, maybe longer than I've been playing, than I've been acting. I've been playing music for 32 years now. So I've been playing music. I suck at math. I started when I was 16. So there we go. And I'm going to be 50 this year. Yes. Dun, dun, dun. I used to go to these things called teen clubs. And I was that annoying kid that hung around the DJ booth like, what's that song? What is that? How do you put the needle on? Blah, blah. And like, I would just ask all these questions. And one night the DJ got sick. And it's my friend Robert Gutierrez. And he called my house and he goes, hey, dude, I had pneumonia. Can you go up to the club and DJ tonight? And I was like, I don't know how to DJ. He goes, man, you know as much as I do. He goes, you watch me do it every night. And I'm like, seriously, dude, I don't know how to DJ. And he said the magic words, because I used to love watching him thumb through all of his records. And he goes, look, this is probably the only chance you'll ever get to dig through my records. And I was like, yeah, tell your dad I'll be there. Like, so like my whole jumping into that way, again, accidental, was because I wanted to dig through my friend's records. It's funny because I started DJing at a time that like DJs did more, like they were more like iPods. You just played song after song after song. And so I've grown up in an age where the DJ has kind of turned into this other thing. Music's like, if you've ever seen me DJ, it's real obvious. Music is like probably one of the most important things in my life. It just never stopped. Once I started doing that, there's something cool about like, it's similar to being an actor, but like, picking a song and watching the whole mood of the room rise up and like, you know, when it looks like they can't take anymore, bringing the tempo back down and playing a few slows. Like, it's just like orchestrating a room full of people. It's super cool. And a lot of what I do as an actor seems very self-congratulatory. I'm a pretty shy person. So like talking about what I do all day, every day, it seems a little weird. But to me, like at the end of a rave, I've earned the you know, the noise because I've like worked my butt off and I've watched everybody have a good time, and so it's just fun. But I can't imagine a time in my life that I won't be playing music somewhere, even at an old folks home.
What's your process when you create a track or a set?
Well, see, I don't produce any music right now, but the guy that I work with in the States, which his name is Tim, but he operates under the name Love Letters from Amsterdam. If you heard that sick remix of Simple and Clean, that's his. He also did the My Hero Academia remix. A lot of the anime stuff is his that I played. It's weird because a lot of people have tried to get me to produce, but I just don't have the time between conventions and now with two family members sick, like home stuff and work. Like, I just, the idea of sitting down and spending 40 hours on a song, I'm like, nah. As far as what I do when I produce a mix, I try to pick a mood and then just kind of flow out from there. And I used to never plan mixes, but now people want them, so I want them to have a solid start and finish. But I'm never set in stone. Like, I don't people will ask me, can I get a copy of your playlist? And I was like, well, I don't have a playlist. Just so much of what I do is based on what I see in the audience. And like, if I see people like are getting tired, that's why I played Moonbaton last night, which is super slow. There were people that were just worn out. And I was like, okay, let's take it to a halftime so everybody can like catch their breath, you know, and then recharge for the end of the show. I guess the only way to prepare for a show is just to keep that line of communication with the audience.
The audience is an instrument themselves.
And I always have a folder of, it's like called new bangers or new crap or whatever. And it's like brand new stuff that I've just bought. But it's funny to me how many times none of those new songs work themselves in. There were a few of them last night that were brand new songs that I played. Tear the Roof Off This Place is one of them. Sometimes the audience dictates what you play, and that's, I guess, what makes me different from a lot of the DJs that I work with. I take a lot of flack for playing DDR songs. So like, oh, you play Sandstorm. I'm like, I play for nerds. Of course I play Sandstorm. It's one of the biggest tracks in DDR. Like I've always said, I'm never smarter than the audience I play for. And they're not dumb. They know what they want to hear. It might not be my stuff. Like, if it was me, we'd listen to nothing but 174 BPM drum bass all night long. But like, not many people can hang with that all night long. So I get a little bit of drum and bass in there, but like, I play what I think the audience wants to hear. And I had somebody who was like, that's pandering. I'm like, no, that's being successful, because they want you back if you play what they want to hear. So, yeah.
Now, I always love your appreciation for Canada.
Oh, man.
What is your favorite Canadianism?
Oh, man. Oh, God. That's like asking me which of my children is my favorite. I hate saying it right now because there's such a weird strain and relationship between my stupid president and trade and all that.
We're like, hunkering and down and just waiting.
Yeah,
right,
I know. It's like being in a hurricane. That's the way we feel. Like, oh, this won't last forever. But I hate to play into a stereotype, but like, I came to Canada when I was 16 years old. I was 16. I performed, now this is going to really date me, I performed at Expo in 86 in Vancouver. The difference in the temperament and the personality of the people, like the politeness, and like, I know that's this thing that always gets blown out for comedy's purpose. Oh, sorry, sorry. Like, and it irritates me when Americans do that, because I'm like, you know, it's actually kind of nice when people, you know, I want to like, it's actually kind of nice to have somebody hold the door for you once in a while. I also worked in Calgary. One of the companies that I did private training for had an office in Calgary, and I had to come here and do a bunch of training. And I learned a phrase that I thought was so cool. My friend goes, oh, you know what we say, it only takes 3 seconds to be polite. And I fell in love with that idea. Like, wow, it only takes a few seconds to be good. And like, she said, yeah, and if everybody just took those 3 seconds, everything would be better. And it was such a simplistic idea, but it made sense. I was like, yeah, it doesn't take any time to do the right thing. So, but there's so many of them. Like, man, oh, there's so many great Canadianisms. I love that you called it Canadianisms. So many great things.
I got to ask you in your panel, is this a hot dog a sandwich? And you actually revealed that you're a bit of a hot dog fiend.
I'm a hot dog nerd.
What would be the Greg Ayers dog?
Oh, thank you for asking, because my Chicago friends are super mad about this. So I love Chicago hot dogs. I don't really like the banana pepper, but like, the thing about the hot dog that's kind of cool is it's got a pickle on it. It's got a dill pickle on it, which is super cool. But the problem with putting a pickle on a hot dog is it goes and like shoots out of the bun the minute you eat it. So I'm like, this, you're about to find out what a hot dog nerd I am. So like, I couldn't, if that's not acceptable. I want a pickle in my hot, or on my hot dog. So, one, I always toast my buns. Like, I always take the buns and like spray them with butter and put like, if I'm being like basic, salt and pepper, but sometimes a little curry, garlic powder, just something to make the bun a little bit yummy. And then, I always use garlic aioli mustard on the bottom and sauerkraut, like this Trader Joe's sauerkraut. But then I slice the dog and then I take a wedge, a pickle wedge, and cut it into tiny strips and shove them in the slice and put the dog in the bun upside down. So there's no way it can escape. Oh. No way it can escape.
We are breaking hot dog science here.
Yeah, I was just like, I went home and thought about it. I'm like, I got to keep this pickle in the bun. Like, I've got to get it. I got to do it. So then after that, then you do one, like whatever cheese you want, a little bit of Gouda on top of some garbage cheddar. Good, and then maybe a little more sauerkraut and and salt and pepper the top, and they disappear. Like, they're gone like that. And I also like the old vegetarian in me is rolling over and screaming when I say that. But I do like Hebrew National beef franks because they're like, they cook evenly. They're super hot to handle when you're trying to cut them to put the pickle in. But they cook really evenly. And I've never had like a gross hot dog when I eat the Hebrew National ones. But the Nathan's ones are okay. But I don't trust like the Oscar Mayer, the like off-brand hot dogs. Like I've heard the, oh, it's just meat garbage. But I do love hot dogs. I love that you can do them so many different ways. So I just had a slum dog at ENC. It's so good. Have you had one?
No, I don't know what a slum dog is.
I can't remember what they bread it with. It's a breaded hot dog with butter chicken sauce wrapped in naan.
Is that around like, here?
Yeah, it's at ENC at the Elephant Castle.
Guys.
Okay, we found our dinner spot.
So good, yeah, it's so good.
One of the last things we love to do with our guests is we love to play games. It's a very simple game. Yeah, it's just this or that.